There was once a very good Rebbe that I know of who got a little carried away when he was giving a Musar Shmuz about cheating on exams. This is exam season, so I guess this is not going to be a Musar Shmuz about cheating on exams. It was just a Pesach. The Rebbe was giving a very fiery Shmuz about how terrible it is to cheat, and you think you're religious if you cheat, you're not a religious Jew if you cheat. And he got so carried away that at one point he said, "And if you cheat on exams, I hope your wives cheat on you when you get married." And everyone's like, "What?" It was just like, and he realized that as soon as he said it, well, I probably shouldn't have said that. Probably shouldn't have gone that far. Immediately following the rules of who's not allowed to be in the Mishkan or even near the Mishkan, the Chumash tells us about the Matnas Kahuna, and then the Parsha of Sota. And Rashi quotes a Gemara Brachas Daf Samach Gimel to explain the connection. Ish ish ki sishteshto, ma kosov lemalem in the inyan. What does it say before Sota? The ish es kedoshav lo yiyu. Im ato ma'akev matnos ha-kohen, if you don't give the matnos kuna, chayecha, shetitzorich lova atzlo lahavi lo es ha-sota. Your wife's going to cheat on you. You're going to need that kohen because you're going to have to bring a sota. Whoa, that is, for what? For not giving some trumos? So now your wife's going to become a sota and you're going to have to bring the sota of all the punishments for failing to give matnas kuna. Why is that the appropriate punishment? I would think that if he had committed sins of arayos, he would deserve a wife who is a sota. That would make sense. I would think that for failing to give matnas kuna, maybe Hashem won't bless him with a plentiful crop because he doesn't know how to handle the money and the plenty that he has been given. Why would a cheating wife, a complete breakdown of shalom bayis, be an appropriate punishment for being stingy with, of all things, matnos kuna? Now I get what Rashi's saying. He's saying the kohen, that you're going to need the kohen. Kohanim are needed for lots of things. Kohanim are needed for avoda. Also, they're needed for birchas kohanim. I don't know, they're needed for lots of things. Dafka, sota, that's what the Torah is setting up for us. We have to understand what the depth of that is. Furthermore, right after the Torah finishes describing the responsibilities of the different families of Levim relating to the Mishkan, the very next thing the Torah tells us about the Mishkan is who to keep out of the Mishkan. Right? Tzavos b'nei Yisrael, v'yishluchu min ha-machne, here's who you send away. Kol tzerua, v'kol zav, v'kol tamei l'nefesh, someone has tzaras, someone has a zav, someone has tamei l'meis. That's the first thing we really learn about the Mishkan after who carries it. You know, well, okay, now we have a Mishkan. What do we do here? Well, here's who you throw out. That's the first thing that we're really told. Why are those three types of tum identified specifically? Especially considering they're not even the same. Mitzora is sent out of Machne Yisrael. The Zav is sent out of Machne Levia. Tamei Meis out of Machne Shechina. Right? They're not even the same of in terms of where they're sent out. Wouldn't you imagine maybe something more uplifting would be in order as the first thing after we're told about who carries the Mishkan? But even if you're going to be so negative, to just throw all three of these guys in the same category seems to be somewhat troubling. And a final question. We go deeper into the Parsha. Immediately following Sota, we have the Parsha of a Nazir. And Chazal, at the beginning of Masechta Sota, very famously identified the connection between the two. Kol haroe sota bikol kula. No, anyone know how does it end? Yazir atzmo minayayin. It will be a nazir, yeah? So anyone who sees a sota bikol kula, it will be so jarring to see a woman in that state of being disheveled and humiliated. He's going to say, "Oh, I swear off wine. This is what wine leads to." Now, I understand that refraining from wine can help a person avoid the loose attitude that can lead to poor decision-making and can lead to a woman becoming a sota. But is being a nazir only about wine? Being a nazir is about a lot more than wine. It's about refraining from cutting hair, refraining from tumas meis. So, yeah, there's one element of Nazirus that somehow relates to Sota. But does that really give the full connection between Sota and Nazirus? It seems to only be giving part of the picture. So again, three basic questions. Question number one, why is it that the Gemara identifies having to bring a wife as a Sota as the punishment for failure in Matnos Kahuna? What do they have to do with each other? Question number two, the Torah tells us, first thing the Torah tells us, who to keep out of the Mikdash, Tzeruah, Zav, Tamei, L'Nefesh. Why is that the first thing the Torah wants to identify about the Mikdash, especially considering they don't even have the same rules? And question number three, that's the connection between Sota and Nazir, but not exactly, because that only connects to one element of the Nazir. It doesn't connect to everything about a Nazir. So I was thinking that maybe we can suggest the following Mahalich. We have, Baruch Hashem, a couple of Chasanim in the Shir, and we have a whole bunch of future Chasanim in the Shir. So I thought maybe to discuss a little bit, you know, when you come across something like Parsha Sota, maybe there's something to be learned about what makes a marriage work from what makes a marriage not work. And maybe a lot of what makes a marriage not work is symbolized by a sota. So I think we can identify three elements, and with those three elements, maybe tie everything together. Element number one is a terrible deterrent to success in a marriage is selfishness. The pasuk starts, my good friend Rabbi Isaac Rice told me that, you know, I don't know if you quoted from someone, ish ish ki sista ishto, the Torah specifically says ish ish. If it's all about him, the man is always thinking about ish ish, he's thinking about the man, he's thinking about himself first, well then it's not, his marriage is not going to stand the chance. One of the greater challenges for a person who their entire life to that point has been single and has really only had to worry about themselves is that where he used to think about what he must do and what he can get away without doing, now that he's married, he has to focus on what can I do to make my wife's life easier. He has to actually put somebody else before himself. There's not an ish-ish, that the first thing he has to think about is somebody else. A good friend, Charlie Arari, told me, said once, I think at his own Sheva Brachos, way back when, he said, that's Pshat Chasen Doma Lemelech, that a melech puts his head down on his pillow at night, he can't possibly just be thinking about himself. He's got an entire country to worry about. So Chasen, for the first time in his life, when he goes to sleep at night, he can't just be thinking about himself. He's got to be thinking about somebody else first. So point number one, selfishness. To learn selflessness, or at least to use the phrase that Adam Grant has in his in one of his books, to be otherish. To at least, selfless is not so good either. A person has to have some sense of self, but otherish, that more focus on the other than people typically have. Second, a person has to learn to maintain a sense of kedusha rather than a sense of self-indulgence. Meaning, to live a life of kedusha, to find role models of kedusha. And this is particularly important, is a good pre-Ben Azmanim kind of discussion also, because when a person is in yeshiva, we are in an environment that more or less, although obviously in today's day and age, there's no secure environment, but we're in an environment that's more or less geared toward kedusha, surrounded by kedusha. When a person goes into a world that is not geared toward and focused on kedusha, it's very important to be on guard, to act proactively, look for inspiration in kedusha, to live a life of kedusha, even as what you're doing most of your day doesn't really seem to resonate on the surface as an act of kedusha. You know, the Gemara in the second paragraph of Basra tells us, "Kim mitzion teitzei Torah," that when they decided to set up yeshivos for the first time, because they realized that fathers can't teach their children by themselves. Initially, the initial decision was to put all the yeshivas in Yerushalayim, nowhere else. They realized that was, you know, an epic fail, because carpools were a nightmare. I mean, how you get all the kids to Yerushalayim? But that was the thought. And Tosfos explained, what was the thought process? Because if the kids are going to be successful in learning, they're going to be successful in being inspired, they have to see Kohanim Bavodasim Levim Beduchanim. They need to have a kesher to people who are living in lives of Kedusha. As long as one can achieve Kedusha and has spiritual role models to do so, he's going to be doing very well. You know, it's a great challenge for certainly a young chassan who, transitioning into a different kind of life, a man-woman relationship, when much of what he's seen about man-woman relationships, certainly on the physical side, has been on a movie screen or on a television screen, which is very, very distant from Kedusha. So a sense of Kedusha. That's what the Gemara Nita tells us. Hashem is there at the Shas HaZivud, determining what all the details, the characteristics of the child, other than whether he's going to be Yirei Shemayim or not. But everything, that's his own choice. But everything else, Hashem is there determining, what's Hashem doing there? What is he? What's his business there? No, because it's an act of Kedusha. And a third element. As with any endeavor in life, a person has to have a sense of mission from Hashem. You know, when the Gemara says, Ein Yisha Elo Lebanim, that a woman is only for banim, right? So it doesn't really, for children, it doesn't really translate well into English. You know, you're not going to get up at Yul L'Chaim or Yul Vard and say, I have a Dvar Torah, she's good for children. Okay, and you sit down. Like, that's what, you know, that's not going to inspire anyone. It's not going to resonate probably with people. But what it's saying is that when a person, what I believe it might be saying is when a person gets married, there should be a goal in mind. Meaning it's not, there's a mission. The mission is the continuity of the Jewish people. How do you best accomplish that mission? Yeah, of course, romantic feelings of love and connection and, you know, and all of those things that human beings look for help enable us to accomplish that mission of the continuity of the Jewish people. A stable home environment, which is based on a great sense of love and trust and commitment and all of that, yes, that helps create a sense of Jewish continuity. So, but that's the goal, a sense of mission. The Sota doesn't just drink anything. What does the Sota drink? An erased Shem Hashem, the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam, symbolizing that Hashem has to be part of who we are, part of our guide in everything that we do. You know, I think I mentioned to you guys, this past 2 years, I attended, for the first two times in my life, the Chabad Kinnus Shluchim, where all the Chabadniks from all around, all the Chabad Shluchim from all around the world gather together, and they have a big Seuda, and the whole, it's a very festive event. But one thing that really jumps out at you, and they don't say, you know, whatever you want to say about Chabad, none of that stuff that you would normally criticize comes out at this event. Wherever else it might come out, that's a different discussion. Not at this event. At this event, it's like mamish, pure, it's wholesome. It's but one thing that really, really comes out is that these are people that have an incredible sense of mission in life, and they're willing to do anything to accomplish their mission. Their mission is to bring Yiddishkeit, and that's it. That's their mission. Remember the shliach from, I forget where it was, maybe Panama or something. Where were there? It was like terrible hurricanes that were like that were wiping out the whole country, and it was Puerto Rico, right? So the shliach from Puerto Rico was saying how the last boat out to get people off the island, so that because there was no electricity or anything, like it was really shvera matziv there. So the last boat out, he wasn't sure if he should go on the boat or not, or because there's still going to be some people left behind. He had a spot, he wasn't sure if he can go. And one of his children said, "But Tati, if you go on the boat, who's going to take care of our yidden?" Meaning that's the sense of shlichus, that we have a mission here. And we'll give up anything for that mission. So that's quite an extreme. But for us to be able to live life with a sense of mission, and married life also comes with a great sense of mission of what you're trying to accomplish is the continuity of the Jewish people in building a home that helps to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. So given those three factors, again the factor of selflessness, or I guess what did I say, otherish. The factor of having a sense of kedusha in what we do, even when our lives are not totally obviously in kedusha, and having a sense of mission in what we do, I think it could connect the following way. Rav Shamshon Feld Hirsch explains that the role of the Mishkan is to allow us to achieve a high level of kedusha, but that there are three major pitfalls along the road to kedusha. And each of these pitfalls may not only be reflected in the tumah that keeps one from the Mishkan, not only the breakdown of the marriage experienced by a sota, but may also be atoned for by a different halacha of a nazir, creating this incredible connection between all of these topics. And it goes as follows. Again, you don't have to like this, but this is just a thought I had. First, there's the metzora. The Metzora is traditionally understood, based on the Gemara and Arachim, as the Baal Lashon Hara, the ultimate selfish person. Cuts himself off from other people so that he could get a good laugh. so that he can get other, you know, he's willing to alienate someone and to speak poorly about someone because of that moment of enjoyment that he has in what he's about to say. And he is sent out of all three machanos because his punishment for detaching himself from society is to be detached from society. I mean, he has removed himself, he has been willing to alienate others, he is now alienated entirely from society. The Nazir atones for the sin of selfishness by growing his hair and then shaving it all off, l'shem Hashem. The hair, we learn from Avshalom, is a sign of gaiva, it's a sign of arrogance, it's a sign of pride. And it's clear from the story in the Gemara Nazir Dav Zayin and Nedarim Dav Zayin, you know, the story about the fellow that saw his reflection in the water, Agalechecha L'Shamayim, and he decided he's going to be Magalech, his hair, L'Shamayim, that, you know, the reflection, it's a mirror for a self-centered person. He decided, Agalechecha L'Shamayim, that it's time to stop being about me, about my own gaiva, and start being about the Ribbono Shel Olam. Second, you have the Zav. The Zav represents the person whose intimate life reflects Tumah. Zav is a Tumah related to the area of the body that is reserved for intimacy. The Zav reflects Tumah rather than Kedusha. And he is sent out of the Machna Leviya. Why? Because he doesn't get to see the holiest members of the Jewish people. He's not there in the Machna Leviya. When he's not sent out, he hasn't alienated himself from the tzibur entirely. He's not sent out chutz megimel machanos, but he doesn't get to have that connection. When given the opportunity, he's failed to be inspired by them, and that's perhaps the connection between sota and the machanos of kohuna, the matanos of kohuna rather. The very notion that kohanim have to be supported by the rest of us seems so far beneath their dignity that, you know, couldn't we just like collect dues and put them in some anonymous account and we'll send checks to them, like, so they don't have to go through the indignity. The kohen used to have to be omir al agorin. He would stand by the threshing floor waiting for the handouts to be able to get his couple of percent of trumos. Why is that necessary? But maybe the idea is that we want each Jewish family to have a connection with a person who is completely dedicated to Avodas Hashem. So it has to be a face-to-face interaction. It has to be sometime where you're forced to meet the Kohen. The inspiration, that inspiration, can bring Kedusha into the home. And one who fails to do that, who fails to develop that relationship, will ultimately be dealing with the problem of a sota, the base misuse of that great Kedusha. The Nazir atones for self-indulgence, lack of Kedusha, by refraining from wine, the very drink that leads to such self-indulgence and lack of Kedusha. It's the very drink that led Noach to do what he did, led Lot to do what he did, a total loss of a sense of Kedusha. And then there's Tamimes. Tamimes represents the first sin when Misa was brought into this world. When a person fails to connect his life's mission to Hashem, he's sent outside of the Machane Shechina. The Nazir is also prohibited from Tumas Meis, representing his need to connect to Hashem and his mission on earth to serve him. So while our parsha might seem to have covered a vast array of topics with a variety of messages, carrying the Mishkan to Tami people being excluded from the Mishkan, to Matnos Kuna, to Sota, to Nazir, there may be this like three-pronged unifying message in all of it. In order for our lives, and particularly married lives, to be strong, in order to enhance Avodas Hashem in general, married or single, we have to work on ourselves to think less about ourselves, more about others. We have to live lives of increased Kedusha, even at this time of year where increased Kedusha is all the more challenging, as you know, more and more people seem to forget to get dressed in the morning. And we have to recognize that we're here on a mission from Hashem, which always has to be the primary focus throughout our lives, that we're on a mission from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we're put in this world to achieve that shlichus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has sent us in.